There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 987, April 10th, 2023. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say Felipe Massa, looking for F. Lee Bailey to rewrite Formula One history. Charles Leclerc gets good news from Carabinieri. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, El Jefe.
Thank you, senor. Folks, it's not cool to bother people at their private residence. Felipe Massa has called Jacobian Myers, and he thinks he has a case for 2008. And we've got a full report from the original JB down in Australia. And this week's special interview, Jose Maria Lopez. Lots of history there, folks. Nas will explain. And just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Also, if you want to receive updates on our podcast, as well as occasional promotions and giveaways that are only announced via our email update. So just go to the front page and add your email and click send. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. Kind of missing Formula One, that's for sure. And that's what happens when the race gets canceled, as happened with the Chinese Grand Prix. But we are on the 10th of April, and before the month is over, I think we will have some motor racing in our lifetime. So that's very good. And I'm also at the end of this month flying to Atlanta, Georgia. And from there, I will take a rental car, and go to Birmingham, Sweet Home, Alabama, for the IndyCar race. It's a beautiful, beautiful track. And folks, just the trip to the museum is worth it. It has the largest collection of vintage motorcycles anywhere in this world. Very, very highly recommended.
Talking about Charles Leclerc, his address got leaked. Now, I didn't look it up because I'm not that kind of a person, but you might want to send him a calendar next year. So it's just a thought.
And that's a very good idea. No, I respect people's lifestyle and privacy. I will not do that. But, you know, it's really getting ridiculous with the social media and all this. Somebody finds something and next thing, you know, it's so sad. We're living in a time where people are killing people and live streaming on Instagram and Facebook. I mean, this is very, very sad events that we are witnessing courtesy of social media. But, you know, that's the way it is. You're going to have some good and some bad. But, and Charles Leclerc, you know, I'm surprised the statement he put out, which was very kind of him. And I've met him a few times, and he's very nice, kid, as most of these F1 drivers are. You know, he said, if you see me, he lives in Monte Carlo. I mean, he's from Monte Carlo. He said, if you see me on the street or anywhere, stop me. I'll be happy to take pictures with you, sign autographs, but respect my privacy, which, you know, he has every right to. So that's kind of very strange people have gone to that. I mean, obviously somebody feels very cool, you know. Hey, I found out Charles Leclerc's address and posted everywhere. Not very cool. But you're safe. I mean, you live in a gated community. People just cannot show up and steal your Peugeot and Citroën, right?
Exactly. We have a gate and armed guards, like most beautiful communities in California.
Yes, very good, very good. What else is going on in the life and times of Mr. Clark Rogers? What say you about Felipe, baby?
Oh, I was laughing, but that's trending. Everybody thinks that the best way to handle something is to just sue everybody. It's very American. It's very, you know, and now it's starting to spread to other people in other countries over the pond. So very nice, but yeah, whatever. I mean, listen, he was traumatized in 08 and he's still traumatized. It happens to a lot of drivers.
If he has any beef, he really needs to go and see Nelson Piquet Jr.
Absolutely. And the FIA. I mean, I'm surprised Nelsino never called him and said,
I'm sorry, so sorry that I was such a fool.
I remember reading some years after this when it happened that Felipe Massa and Nelsino were going to some event, motorsports event, in Italy in a car together. And Felipe Massa asked him, did you do it deliberately? And he says, no. And I don't know whether it was a week or 2 weeks after that, but I do recall reading this interview from Felipe Massa. But you know what is interesting? Who knows what the truth is? But I do recall, you know, this whole thing is based on that FIA knew about this. Of course they knew about this because recollecting from when it happened, this happened in like September, right? And after that was the Brazilian Grand Prix was apparently a few weeks after that. My understanding from reading at that time was that Nelson Piquet Sr. did tell Max Mosley about what happened. And Max Mosley, being the wonderful barrister lawyer he was, he said, we want your son to sign an affidavit. And Nelson Piquet did not want his son doing that because he already, you know, at that time he had a contract for the next season. But when he got the Isaac Hayes-CD from Flavio, then of course they had every reason to. And he got full immunity for signing that affidavit. So these are just sour grapes from Sao Paulo. Hate to say that, but that's what it is. You can't do this, you know. What's next, you know? I mean, I was thinking maybe I should call Dr. Miguel. Oh, by the way, speaking of Dr. Miguel, today is his birthday, so happy birthday to Dr. Miguel. Hope you had a great day. And hopefully we will meet soon. And so I was thinking of, you know, maybe I should ask Dr. Miguel. He can sue the Saudi Arabian government for his people invading his land 1,000 years ago. And so these lawsuits can be flying all over town, which really would bring out the truth about what Paul Newman said. Lawyers have to eat also. You're not taking any action against any other podcast or any other human being.
No, I'm not one to be vindictive and mean. You have to just let it roll off and move along. And we're very thick-skinned here. Hence the reason why we still exist, because of the macho level here.
Oh, yes. In America, you have to have thick skin. Otherwise, it's going to be pretty sad scene. You got to take the sucker punches and slings and arrows and just get up and go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you remember many years ago, I was much more sensitive and thin-skinned.
Oh, are we talking about the lobby of Holiday Inn at Indianapolis?
It's possible, Nass. I don't recall very much of anything anymore, but yes, I've grown and become much more like Fernando.
Well, I must let the familiar members know, all I did was, this was in the early days of podcasting and website, all I did was made a mention of another podcast website. Oh boy, the Katusha rockets were being launched from the Mr. Rogers pockets, right, left, and every which way. But, you know, like you said, we have become kinder and gentler in our own way and have developed very thick skin. And sir, we have some great motorsports information today, all the way from Australia to Argentina. So let's go back to Albert Park and our man on the spot, the original JB, Mr. Jason Bentley. And I want to thank him very much for doing this. And we hopefully will meet next year. That's the plan. Okay? It may be at Albert Park, it may be at Mount Panorama or Phillip Island. But I've seen the promised land of Australia, and I need a trip there, which hopefully I will do next year. But again, thank you very much, Mr. JB. Greatly appreciated what you have done here, and I hope our listeners enjoy this reportage.
G'day from the original JB trackside at Albert Park in Melbourne, and here's my $2 dues on the Australian F1. Firstly, we all say things aren't as good as they used to be. However, without massive crowds and fandom cautions, any sport will struggle to survive. I love the old days of the small crowds, being up close and personal to the teams and drivers, lots of inclusions and reasonably priced tickets, plus the noise of F1. How things have changed. Australia's gone from being threatened of losing the F1 to securing it until 2037. The crowds have at least doubled, the prices have more than doubled, but the sound's at just 20% of what it used to be. So what's all the marketing done? It's brought F2 and F3 to Australia for the first time, so that's a good thing. It's a guaranteed Australia to be on the calendar for a very long time. It's continued to be a favourite of the teams, and many drivers said it should be round one. It seems I'm wrong, and they are right. There were so many first-time attendees at this year's event. They all told me they're hooked and they'll be back next year. Hopefully the organisers don't go all Miami and Las Vegas and price those people out of the event. These are young people and the future fan base, so be careful, AusGP Corp. The area where the drivers and the teams enter the paddock has always been accessible to the fans since way back when. Now it's a total circus, but it's a highlight for those who are keen. What's sad is when world champions walk into the paddock past newly minted fans and they're not recognised. I saw JV and Damon Hill enter the paddock unnoticed, plus past winners of the AusGP, and everyone's favourite, Fisico. Very sad they walked in unnoticed. Yet Will Buxton, who I was never a fan of, enters the same path as a rock star. It's truly bizarre stuff. In the F2 and F3 paddocks, it was special to see Fittipaldi, Montoya and Doohan above the garages. Mansell was also in F3, though he comes from a village that I used to ride through on the way to school as a rural kid in Australia, but no relation to our Nige. This year marks 70 years since the first Australian Grand Prix race at Albert Park. The non-championship event was held at many different tracks around Australia. Back in the day, it was an anti-clockwise circuit. There were a lot of historic cars at the circuit to help mark the date. The car owned by Lex Davison and his father was a goosebumps experience for those who know about the history of Australian motor racing. Something that sparked my attention during the on-track commentary. The commentators joked that you can't call Jack Doohan the son of Mick Doohan anymore. You have to call Mick the father of Jack Doohan. Mick won 5 world championships at the top level. Jos Verstappen had 106 starts with 0 poles, 0 wins and 0 champions. He firmly is the father of Max Verstappen and he ought to be his son's ambassador. There wasn't a huge amount of love for Max. Lilham had a lot of love. His dad went unrecognised when shown on the big screens, but that's not a bad thing. A bit of humility goes a long way with Australians. Monty was in town to cheer his son. That was good. A Brazilian won the F3 race, so it was nice to hear the Brazilian national anthem again. Memories of Robinho and Nando is faster than you. Finally, how wonderful to see Jackie Stewart at the Grand Prix. Some of the drivers, personnel and foreign media complain and joke about how far and how hard it is to get to Australia. But Jackie's been coming to Australia and New Zealand to race and represent the world of motorsport long before private jets were a thing. God bless Sir Jackie. He also mentioned he's been a Rolex ambassador since 1958, which is handy considering the many GPs are called the insert nation Rolex Grand Prix, Australia being one of those. So the event's different, the world is different, life is different, and cash is king. Despite it all, I wouldn't hesitate to come again and again and again. It's F1, baby. Hope you all enjoyed it. It was an amazing experience being there this year. All those cautions, what can you say? It helped make the spectacle. Highly recommend AusGP to anyone who's thinking about it. Bye all.
JB, the check. It's in the mail. Nass?
Well, Mr. Rogers, going back to the past weekend, as you know, no Formula One. That means life in the slow lane. sure to make you lose your mind, but we still have our marbles straight. But I thought it would be a good time to take a look at the life and fast times of Mr. Max, the Mozart of motorsports, playing Rock Me Amadeus from Australia to Azerbaijan. And from Bahrain to Brazil, and composing his own symphony of success in the top tier of motor racing. Chances are awfully good. By the time Checo checks in at the Parc Fermé for his third win of the season, if that happens this season, and I hope it does, his congenial teammate will be celebrating his third successive championship. He will be the only second driver in the 70-plus years of Formula One history to win his first three championships in a row, first being the first Red Bull superstar and wunderkind, Herr Sebastian Vettel. So, Mr. Rogers, we're going to take a look at champions who won three or more titles and how they were achieved. This is what we call the Triple Play Club. Does that make sense?
It does. The trifecta of machismo-ness.
Oh, man, I wish you had not used the last word. But anyway, we shall proceed here. The maestro, Juan Manuel Fangio, was the first driver to win three championships for a total of five. He won his first championship in 1951 with Alfa Romeo. Then there was a gap of 2 years when Alberto Ascari did a machismo and went two in a row. From 1954 through 1957, Fangio took four titles with three different teams: Mercedes, Ferrari, and Maserati. Australian Jack Brabham was the second driver to grab three titles. He won the first two championships in a row, 1959 and 60, with Cooper, and the third and final came in 1966 with his own car with a modified version of Oldsmobile engine prepared by Australian company Repco, which stands for Replacement Parts Company, and the company is still around. You know, I was thinking, if I ever go to Australia, which I'm very much interested in doing in the near future, Repco offices, and I'm sure somewhere they have some memorabilia from Jack Brabham, I definitely would like to stop at one up there if they have a historical depot or an office. But it's a name that I've known since I was very young, so it'll be nice to take a walk into a replacement. Maybe I can buy a Midas muffler there. Okay, now we come to the wee Scott, Jackie Stewart. He was the third driver in the Triple Plus Club, winning the championship in 1969, 1971, and going out in style, but unfortunately in tragic circumstances, in 1973. All three championships came driving for Uncle Ken, and his first championship came driving the beautiful Matra. The Austrian super rat Niki Lauda also won three championships, two with Ferrari in 1975 and 77, and final title in 1984 for McLaren after Ron Dennis got him out of retirement. And this is the championship in 84 that was won by half a point, thanks to Senna being robbed of victory at Monaco and Prost winning that. But since the race was this stock well before the normal distance, they awarded only half point. So there is some karma there. Alain Prost won the first two of his championships in a row, 1985-86. And do you remember the 86 finale in Australia, right?
Very exciting.
Yes, poor Nige. And the third one came in 1989. This was his most impressive championship, as it came against Max of the moment. And we all know who that was. Prost's fourth and final championship came in 1993 with the all-conquering Williams car. The following year, he could have gone four in a row, as circumstances turned out. But he left the team as he did not want to see the yellow helmet in the other car. Incredibly, and this is one of those great chilling moments of life for me, he has one of those yellow helmets next to his own helmet at his home in Switzerland. And I've seen a picture of this, so that's why I'm saying this. Can you imagine walking into, if you're lucky enough to be invited to his casa, And there in a nice display is a helmet of Ayrton Senna and Alain Prost side by side. Very, very impressive. Senna himself had to fight tooth and nail with the professor for his first two championships in 1988 and 1990. For his third and final championship in 1991, high voltage challenge was provided by an electrical engineer from Birmingham, England, driving the Red 5. One never knew if our Nige was AC or DC, but he was always electrifying. He went short fuse on Ron Dennis at the 1991 Japanese Grand Prix. Do you remember when he grabbed Ron Dennis's shirt after he spun out on his own while chasing Senna?
Yeah.
That's a very, very classic moment. Now we come to Michael Schumacher. Schumacher's first two championships came in a row, in 94 with Ford Power and 95 with Renault Power. Then he had to wait till 2000 before going five in a row on a prancing horse. And now we come to your favorite, LCH. To borrow his own phrase, he would have been a one-hit wonder had he stayed with McLaren. He set a new record after being on the podium in Australia. This was his 17th consecutive year he has been on the podium, now one more than Michael. But someone is in hot pursuit of both Michael and Lewis. In the hybrid era, Lewis was alpha male, taking six championships. He went unbeaten in the championship from 2017 to 2020, and in 2021 he had to face in the season finale something called a motor race, but that's the way the cookie crumbles. You know, this was very interesting for me. His record of youngest world champion lasted two seasons. You know, it was for years and years, it was Emerson Fittipaldi, youngest world champion. And do you remember who broke his record?
A certain machismo man.
Exactamundo. And his record was broken very shortly by LCH. And his own record of being the youngest world champion lasted two seasons when Sebastian Vettel led the championship for the first time in the season finale in 2010 as Yas Marina. And then the German Wunderkind won three more on the trot with Renault Power. And when we talk of LCH, we have to talk about his one-time teammate, El Machismo. Even though he is not in the Triple Plus Club, we all know he is very deserving for being in the Triple Three, Triple Four, Triple, all these championship he has lost by a point or some silliness. Anyway, Fernando Alonso won his first two championships in a row. And do I need to remind everybody, it was against Michael Schumacher, which is an incredible achievement in itself. He was very hot in a mild 7 Renault, beating Schumi 2 years in a row. Since then, he has been sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the championship roll in.
I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away.
And roll out for Lewis and Max. But, as we say here, no package, no delivery. You cannot win an F1 championship in a tugboat. Hopefully, for the health of our host, and the billions and billions of dollars that Lawrence Stroll is throwing at the team will one day provide him a lightning-fast green colibri in which he can splash to his long-awaited and much-deserved championship number 3. Time will tell and we shall see. Mr. Rogers, some good news for you. I'm hearing on a lot of other motorsports network, magazines, this and that, that this year Fernando Alonso will win a race. And I have a very strong feeling all it takes is Checo and Maxo doing a LCH and Nico from Barcelona. The question I have when that momentous moment arrives, how are you going to celebrate? Will we be able to record a podcast the next day?
Probably not. I will be just too elated, swimming in champagne and having all the good stuff that one deserves when one wins a championship. No, I'll be suffering for days, just shaking unbelievably. So no, let's not jinx Fernando, but my fingers are crossed.
No, the only person who can jinx Nando is Nando himself, but that's another story. Okay, sir, moving on to some other, you know, it's a slow day in motor racing, so we have to find something motor racing related. Big money in Big Apple. Bill Gates' daughter Jennifer has bought Lewis Hamilton's New York City penthouse for only $51 million. Now, I have a question for you. Of the proceeds, of course, some of it will go to the sales agent, right? The seller has to pay, at least here in the US of A. So let's say Lewis Hamilton is left with $45 million. Question I have for you, how much of that money he's going to spend on sponsoring what he calls his people who have been denied access into Formula One and motor racing? What say you?
Starting to remind me of Oprah Winfrey. Not sure. Maybe he'll adopt a child. I have no idea how some of these billionaires decide to be philanthropic and who they choose. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of words coming out of Lewis Hamilton. I hope he does a lot of good with his money. I really do. He can. He's a force to reckon with. He can influence a lot of people. So we'll see. I mean, all I know is he's hanging around Brad Pitt and making some decisions, you know, for this movie. That's his biggest responsibility when he's off the track.
And, you know, in all fairness, we don't know how much good he does, so we really don't know. So maybe he's doing that already. But speaking of adopting a kid, maybe he can do a Madonna and bring a young whippersnapper from Malawi and try to get him into racing. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be awesome. Or architecture is also pretty fun.
Yeah, very true, very true. Okay, speaking of money, show me the money. This is interesting. Williams have hired a gentleman by the name of Paul Asensio from Mixed Martial Arts Company, UFC, as Chief Revenue Officer overseeing the Formula One team's commercial and marketing operations. Senor Asensio, who also worked previously for the New York Mets in Major League Baseball, will be based in team's New York office, which is the home base of Williams owners, Darlington Capital. And you know, with so much hoopla going about motor racing and Formula One in the United States, I mean, you hear more about Formula One in American media now than Indy cars. I mean, they're not going to top on NASCAR. And frankly, there is no need to do that anyway. I would love to see companies like, you know, the household names like Pepsi, Coca-Cola, Apple, and what else do we have? McDonald's. I mean, McDonald's is in every corner of the world. They need to be on Formula One machines. What say you?
I agree. What about Caterpillar? IBM? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there, but a lot of them just like to just save their money.
No, a lot of these, you know, Caterpillar had a big sponsorship in NASCAR many years ago with Ward Burton. And speaking of Ward Burton, he won the Daytona 500 in a Caterpillar-sponsored car. And if anybody has not seen that Winner's Circle interview, I would highly recommend. It is just, as Mr. Rogers would say, giggles and laughs. And no, it'll be very nice to see this these big names, you know. And if they come and they have so much money, they have a lot of staying power. I mean, look at how much money Marlboro threw over the years. But you know, there's one big problem with mega huge corporation. Most of them are based here. Anyway, they are so big that it really makes no sense for them to sponsor they have to sponsor an American driver. If Max is available to sponsor, and so is Jack Crawford from Texas, which way would you go?
Jack Crawford, pretty exciting.
Yeah, he's in the Red Bull program and his nickname is Jetpack. So I think that's what it hurts American drivers, you know, in terms of getting sponsors from their own country. And of course, we have not even mentioned behemoths like ExxonMobil. Mobil is already there. Exxon and Chevron and Texaco. Do you remember when Texaco used to sponsor the McLaren team?
Oh, yes. Many years ago. Texas was cool and happening back in the day.
Yeah. We had Firestone, Goodyear. There are some rumors that, you know, this tender for F1 tire supply is coming up again. And I'm hearing some among the interested parties is Goodyear. And it'll be good to see them back.
That would be good. Free NASCAR shirts for everybody. I'm ready.
Oh, and it's interesting you say that. I was at this, Indy Pro Junior Series race at Sebring a few weeks ago. And guess what? Who was giving free T-shirt? And I got me one. Cooper Tires. You've seen those ads on TV, right?
Absolutely, sir. Made in America by Americans.
Yeah. And guess who owns Cooper Tires now?
Michelin.
No, Goodyear.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Michelin owns B.F. Goodrich.
Yes, I know that. So that's very exciting.
And Bridgestone owns Firestone. And speaking of Firestone, I have to say this. I have a lot of respect for them because they were the ones who brought, you know, these grooveless tires into Formula One based on their experience in American drag racing. So Big Daddy and the Mongoose has made contribution to Formula One, just so you know. Okay, sir, now we're going to be moving to some serious matters.
Bad boys, what you going to do? What you going to do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you going to do? What you going to do when they come for you?
Bad boys, what you going to do when they come for you? Finally, some good news and Italian efficiency for Signor Charles Leclerc. Police in Italy have arrested four people wanted in connection with the theft of a luxury watch belonging to the Ferrari ace. According to Reuters, the police said in a statement that they found two valuable watches while searching the house of one of the suspects. And, you know, listen to this, Mr. Rogers. Leclerc was wearing a $320,000 Richard Mille timepiece, which was taken when he stopped to pose for photographs with fans in the Via Salvatore area of Italy in April 2022 on the Monday evening before last year's Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, which takes place at Imola. What do you think about a watch costing $320,000?
I think it's, and I don't get me wrong, I like watches. I have a small collection of watches. I like mechanical watches. I have my father's World War II Bulova. I love old watches and that all of that. But, you know, there's so many poor people. Do you feel comfortable wearing a $320,000 watch? I mean, as a young man, I understand the rush to be wearing something that is so expensive. But, you know, you could spend that money on, you can get a nice Timex for like $100. And then you could donate the rest to Doctors Without Borders or something. That's just me.
Now, remember Lando Norris also had his watch stolen, and even Bernie Ecclestone was mugged and stripped off his Hublot watch. And Hublot was very proactive on this, you know. Remember Bernie was punched in the face and he had a black eye? So they took that mugshot in their advertising, saying what some people would do for a Hublot watch. And of course, Bernie must have loved it. And sir, speaking of Timex, this is the reason, folks. Timex is the official watch of F1 Weekly. It takes a licking and keeps on ticking, just like the staff. Ain't that the truth, Mr. Rogers?
You know, that's a pretty good slogan, Nasser. I am telling you, if our marketing department doesn't get a whiff of that, I don't know what to do.
Exactly.
Okay, NASA, I'm a little thirsty, and I have Lupe in the F1 Weekly cuisine fixing me some vittles. So we'll be back after these brief messages.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call, 850-421-8461, and tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair, right on the corner, right on the price, 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Today, our special feature is an interview with Jose Maria Lopez, also known as Pechito. He is the first driver from Argentina since Juan Manuel Fangio to win a Motorsports World Championship, which was achieved when he took the World Touring Car Championship title in Suzuka, driving for Citroën. He is from Cordoba region of Argentina, and at one time he was in the Renault Driver Development Program and won a race in GP2, and was also signed to the wonderful effort called USF1 led by Ken Anderson and Peter Windsor. Despite losing money and opportunity to race in Formula One, Lopez looks back on this experience with a positive attitude, because of course I asked him about this situation. This conversation took place at Sebring during the WEC weekend. He has been a member of the Toyota team for several years now, and with them also became the first Argentine driver since Jose Froline Gonzalez to win the Le Mans 24-hour motor race. So there's a lot of history with Jose. My thanks to him for his time, and also many thanks to Britta and Tomas of Toyota Gazoo Racing based in Cologne, Germany, in making this possible. Here's Jose. Okay, folks, I'm here at Sebring with Senor Jose Maria Lopez, also known as Pechito. Jose, good to see you. How are you today?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm good. I'm happy to be officially starting the season here in Sebring. Yeah, looking forward. Honestly, we've been testing, we've been working a lot, and you know, to be already starting the season with so many competitors and brands, you know, joining the series is very exciting.
Now, before we talk about your wonderful racing career, let's talk about something more important. I have a feeling you are very happy Messi got the championship.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, he finally came to us after a long way. Very happy for the team, for Argentina, for Messi. I think, we did a great World Cup, and I think the team really, really deserved that.
Have you ever met him?
No, I never met. Maybe, hopefully, one day, yeah.
Okay, you are from the land of Maestro and Lole, and you got the racing bug at age 7 when your dad bought you a go-kart. Tell us about your karting life and early racing life in Argentina.
My karting life was very nice, actually. You know, it's one of the nicest memory I have. Go-kart, you know, is the most pure thing. And from young age, it's nice. I remember enjoying with friends, and then I had a nice go-kart career. Went to Europe when I was younger. I competed there with CRG and managed to win the European Cup, and I'm racing the World Cup. So I have a nice memory from work. It gave me a lot. I learned a lot from it.
Now, your hometown is Rio Tercero in Cordoba. Do you know a guy by the name of Sasha Fenestraz?
I do. So I met Sasha when he was very young, back in the racing track, in the go-kart track, in Jesus Maria. After that, I became very, very, very good friend with him, with the family as well, and since then we've been always in touch.
That's good. Some years ago, I met Lole in Buenos Aires, and I asked him what was the difference between racing in Argentina and when you first went to Europe. His response was night and day. What was your experience when you first raced in Europa?
Well, it's different. I wouldn't say night and day, but it's different. You know, it's like if you play football and you know, we have a good league, but, you know, if you want to compete with the best of the best and in a very high level, you need to go to Europe or... and that was the case, you know, early in my career. I knew if I wanted to try to have a shot in Formula One and learn and grow up on the sport, I had to go to Europe, and that's why I did the step. Then, of course, you know, because of that, I could compete with the best of the best to learn, challenge myself, and compete in, you know, like today, World Championships and those things.
In 2002, you won the Formula Renault Italian Championship, beating Robert Kubica, which is very impressive. How tough of a competitor was Robert in those days?
Well, with Robert, we had the chance to compete in go-karts and also in some series like Formula Renault. Yeah, back in the days, he was already, I'd say, a star. You know, we all knew that he was going to be someone who was going to make it. And it was nice to compete with him, beat him, he beat me, and I have a good memory from here and from him, and at the time, you know, we were, I wouldn't say friends, but yeah, we knew each other.
Okay. After that, you won a race in GP2 and was part of the Renault driver development program. How was the experience working with Flavio Briatore, and how close you came to becoming a Renault F1 driver?
Well, it was one of my golden years, and you know, winning the Formula Renault Championship, then winning the Renault V6 Championship, becoming a Renault driver development program, get the chance to test the Formula One, get the chance to be part of Formula One. It was very nice. You know, I had a lot of mileage in Formula One. I unfortunately wasn't at the right time at the right moment, I guess, and I missed the opportunity at that time. But you know, I keep a very good memories from it.
Now, this is very important. When you won the World Touring Car Championship at Suzuka, I remember watching the TV, and you said you were very happy to win here, as your hero also won his championship at the same track. What do you remember most about Senna and his races?
Well, I mean, Senna, I think, you know, he was an idol, a person, a driver you wanted to imitate, but also a person who you wanted to imitate. I think he had a very, very strong personality. He always spoke for himself, and you know, I'm from my early age, when I was following Formula One, or I started to understand what I was about, and watching other races, you know, it was very nice to watch. Honestly, I would have met him one day, but yeah, honestly, one of the thing I will miss in my life probably.
Now, you won 3 championships in a row in World Touring Cars Championship. Which championship and races have the best memories for you? Because you were racing against some very good competition.
I think I have good memories from all the championships, you know. Up and downs, good memories. Not only because of winning, you know, I keep the best. But yeah, I would say the time when I was in World Touring Cars, I had a very good people around me, a great team, a great atmosphere. And I can say the same now. And back in the days, also in go-karts, I think, you know, probably, yeah, okay, I didn't get to Formula One, which was probably my dream back in the when I was younger. But I think the good thing is I was always surrounded by good people. I got a lot of good friends from motorsport, and yeah, and also achieved some good things. You know, having five world championships, not in Formula One, but you know, in other series, is also something nice. You know,
absolutely. In 2021, when you won Le Mans with Toyota, you became the first driver from Argentina to win since Jose Froline Gonzalez in 1954. That has to be a very proud moment for you.
Yeah, definitely. Since I joined the World Endurance Championship, you know, being in Le Mans was a dream, but also winning Le Mans was something that I always was looking for. I knew it was very hard, it was a big challenge, but yeah, become the winner after, you know, for Froline Gonzalez, after so many times for Argentina, it made me very proud, yeah.
Did you ever get a chance to meet Jose Froline Gonzalez?
Yes, I did. I did have a chance. A great man, a great personality, a great character from Argentina. Yeah.
Yeah, I met him also when I went to Argentina in 2011. Okay, what is more exciting, going full speed at Mulsanne at midnight or high noon?
Night time always.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because you don't see.
And how is Spa-Francorchamps Eau Rouge in a hybrid car?
It's very nice. It's very nice. Flat out, good speed. Yeah, definitely something nice.
Okay, you mentioned your dream to Formula One. It almost came true with the defunct USF one. How did that deal happen, or try to happen? Did you call them, or they approach you first?
At that time, I remember I was back in Argentina racing, and we managed to join some to put some sponsors together. And yeah, I think it's just, you know, the window of opportunity came at that time because three teams were able to join Formula One at that time. And yeah, we got in contact with the team, and yeah, it was a good journey. Unluckily, you know, it didn't happen, but yeah, it was worth the try.
Was Carlos Reutemann involved in guiding you or advising you on this project?
Yeah, we had some advice for him. Yeah, definitely.
And what was the most important lesson you learned from that experience?
I think I learned a lot. You know, to try. You know, to follow your dreams. You know, I think as I always say, even if it didn't happen, if I wouldn't have tried, I think I wouldn't be as satisfied as I am today. You know, I think it didn't happen, but at least, you know, I had the chance.
Great. Okay, your compadre Ricardo Juncos has a team in IndyCar racing. Any chance we might see you do the Long Beach Grand Prix or the Indy 500 someday with him?
Oh, why not? I mean, you never know.
Oh, you're interested in doing the 500?
Of course. I mean, Indy is always, it's been a very nice series and category to do. I'm very happy where I am at the moment. I wouldn't give up what I have today for that. I mean, being part in the World Championship and with all the manufacturers we have today is something that made me proud of. But yeah, of course, if I have the opportunity, it would be nice.
Okay. You have been very successful all over the world, and we wish you continued success. What are your favorite tracks around the world and also here in the United States?
United States, I would say, you know, Kota was... I really enjoy also Sebring, but Kota, I would say, I really like that track. And in Europe, I definitely say the Nordschleife.
Okay, you seem to be very happy with Toyota. Are there any plans for them to come back to Formula Uno?
I have no idea. That's a question you need to ask about.
Okay, I'll check with Pascal. Okay, Toyota is selling a lot of cars here in the United States and everywhere. How big is their market share in Argentina, and is Pachito helping push up the sales?
Well, I think, you know, Toyota is huge everywhere, around the world, you know, the cars and everything. And in Argentina, it's big, very big as well. We have a factory, especially for the pickup, for the Hilux. They produce for not only for Argentina but for also other countries, it's very popular. I have a Hilux as well.
Maria Lopez, gracias a usted y tu familia. Nasser?
Okay, sir. This is very interesting, Mr. Rogers, you know, spanning the globe, you know, but spanning the web to get some motorsports. I realized that there was French Formula 4 racing available and French touring car, so that was interesting. And very late night, Saturday, and very late Friday night and Saturday night, we have action from Nihon, Japan. So we have some information, interesting information, on the opening weekend of the Japanese Super Formula Series at Fuji Circuit, which is owned by Toyota. Liam Lawson, Red Bull driver from New Zealand, has been placed there by Dr. Marco, just like Pierre Gasly, after 2 years in Formula 2. Man, what a performance by the Kiwi driver. He is the youngest driver in the series and won on his debut. And if anybody's interested, these races are on YouTube. What is even more amazing, this is the sixth different championship that Lawson has won in his race debut. He did the same in Formula 2 and the DTM German touring cars, both of them very, very impressive. He did the same in Euro Formula Open, which is, I would say, a fancy name for Spanish F3, and a series called Formula Regional Asia Series, which used to be previously Asian Formula 3 Series. And also he did the same thing in his home championship Toyota Racing Series, which takes place in the first few months of the year and has been very popular among young drivers. It was watching him in this series a few years ago that I realized what a talent he was. Man of the moment back then was Ferrari young ace and also from New Zealand, Marcus Armstrong. Lawson won the championship in a nail-biting season finale. His victory over the weekend was the first time since 1978 that a driver won on debut. Back then it was Swiss timing, Mr. Mark Surer. Two other drivers have also won on debut prior to there. Local driver Masahiro Hasemi in 1974, and man from Padova, Italy, and one-time teammate to Nigel Mansell, Riccardo Patrese. Sir, have you ever watched any of the action from Japanese Super Formula Series?
I have. The first thing that is impressive is the cars. They're not Formula 2 cars. They're not Formula 3 cars. These are almost Formula 1-ish kind of cars. They're fast. It's a very exciting series. I'm telling you, I love it. And don't forget, Nasser, another series that was rolling in its Toto's favorite series, that would be the Clio Cup, started last weekend.
Oh, yes. Toto's favorite. I don't know where the Clio Cup was, but this French touring cars and French Formula 4, they were happening at Nogaro.
Very interesting, because that's where the Clio Cup was, at the Paul Armagnac circuit in Nogaro. Very, very cool. Mathieu Lannepoudant got his first Clio Cup victory last Monday at the circuit in Nogaro. Initially, he was second, but the driver from Air sur la Dour was close, but inherited a penalty, and so Mathieu got the deal. But yeah, nice track, wonderful part of the world. I love it. I love the Clio Cup. Wolf knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, and no, the track is nice, and I watched some of the Formula 4 action, and I'm going to watch the French touring cars also. Sometime you can find some familiar names in that series. Okay, Mr. Rogers, now we come to a moment in motorsports history.
These exclusive pictures were the last to be taken of Jim Clark, twice world champion racing driver and one of the most admired men in the history of motorsport. With teammate Graham Hill, Clark was to compete in a Formula 2 race at Hockenheim, Germany. Fate decreed it would be his last race. The 32-year-old sheep farmer from the border country prepared to race his Lotus Ford Cosworth. The track was wet, but not unduly so, as the master driver set off on the first circuit. It was in the fifth lap that something went wrong. Clark's car had not reappeared in front of the timekeeper. The reason was soon clear. Clark had careered off the track at over 150 miles an hour. A stunned Graham Hill searched among the wreckage for a clue to the inexplicable crash. Clark had been killed instantly as his car smashed through the trees bordering the track. Like Hill, Colin Chapman, and the rest of the Lotus team, the world mourns the loss of a likable man who was also one of the greatest Grand Prix drivers of all time.
April 7, 1968. Heavy rain and a crash on lap 5 cut short the life of one of the Grand Prix racing's greatest legends, and for many, the greatest driver of all time. Very hard to argue on that. And this happened, unfortunately, in a Formula 2 race at the Hockenheim Ring in heavy rain. Jim Clark was born on March 4, 1936 in Fife, Scotland. He was quick in any car, won in Lotus Cortina in Tin Top, NASCAR race, the 1965 Indy 500 by 2 minutes. His entire Grand Prix career of 72 races was spent with one team, Colin Chapman. His first victory came at Spa in 1962, his first championship came in 1963. This was a season in which all races were won by British drivers. He was on his way to winning the championship again in 1964, when in the season finale in Mexico City, the engine failed on the final lap. His second and final championship came in 1965. Now listen to this, that year he also won the British F2 Championship, Tasman Series in Australia and New Zealand, and a race in America on Memorial Day. Plus, he also won some sort of a, I don't know how many races it was, some sort of a French championship. So quite a season in 1965 he had. He took his 25th and last F1 victory in the first race of the 1968 season in South Africa. At the time, he sailed past Fangio's 24 Grand Prix wins to become the most successful F1 driver. There is a video of Jim Clark recorded on German TV on April 6, 1968, posted on YouTube, in which he is pushing his Formula 2 car to the stage with German driver Kurt Ahrens in it. Or maybe the name is Kurt Ahrens. This is very chilling to watch, it was recorded day before the accident. The German guy, of course, is speaking in German, but then he's also talking to Jim Clark in English. So anybody who's a fan of Jim Clark, I would recommend watching this. Now, this was something that really hit me very hard when I read many, many years after the accident, actually just a few years ago. Chris Amon was in that race also, and he was running behind Graham Hill. And Graham Hill was also in a Lotus like Jim Clark. And what had happened is Jim Clark had, it was heavy rain, Jim Clark had come into the pits and then gone out. I'm sorry, Graham Hill had made a pit stop and gone out. And he came just ahead of Chris Amon. So Chris Amon thought that he is behind Jim Clark. When the race finished, Amon said to the Ferrari engineer, Signor Mauro Forghieri, who himself passed away recently, that his wet tires were so bad that even Jim could not pull away from him. And Forghieri said to him, Jim did not finish the race. And that's when the sad reality set in, and Amon would later say, if this could happen to Jimmy, it could happen to any one of us. Clark's final race was the first Formula 2 race for a young English driver who would go on to make a huge impact in the world of motor racing. And that name, Max Mosley. And Mr. Rogers, you know, one of the items very high on the bucket list is the Jim Clark Museum in Scotland. And depending on how things work out for me in July, work-related obviously, if I am on the same program as Mr. Rogers and enjoying full-time retirement, then it just might happen in July of this year. And that'll be quite a trip. And some, while we are talking on the sad note of passing away, Lucy Foyt, wife of A.J. Foyt, passed away last week. And another gentleman that really, the name brought a lot of memories for me was Craig Breedlove. He was a great name in the world of land speed record. He was the first person to reach 500 and 600 miles per hour. The name of his machine was Spirit of America. He was 86 years old and passed away in Rio Vista, California. And Mr. Rogers, this was a name I was very familiar with as a kid, and I remember reading about him. And there was another gentleman by the name of Art Arfons about Bonneville land speed record. And this was even before I got hooked on Formula One. So when you know names like these pass away, it jolts you. We would like to extend our condolences to their respective families and friends. Anything you want to say, sir?
No, AJ, Foyt's wife, Lucy, that's got to be rough on AJ, you know. And Roger Penske put out a very beautiful statement. It's all very impressive. But yes, we're at that age where a lot of people in rock and roll and Formula One are all kicking the bucket.
Yes, and we love both of these items. So, yeah, I did read that Roger Penske statement. That was very well said. Roger has known these people all his life, you know. You know, Roger Penske was on the cover of Sports Illustrated in the late 50s. So you can imagine how long this has been, how long this gentleman has been in motor racing. Okay, so now we come to famous last words. Now, there was a gentleman most of our listeners would know, John Wire. He ran the Porsche and the Ford Gulf Colors team in sports car racing. Very well-known guy, and I remember reading about him when he passed away. He was living in Scottsdale, Arizona in the late 80s. So that was another connection to old-time racing passing away. And one of his drivers was Pedro Rodriguez, who, of course, was the first Mexican to win a Formula One race. And he's very, very famous for an incredible drive, sort of like a Donington 93, which he accomplished at Brands Hatch in a Porsche driving for John Wire. And John Wire was talking about his attitude, Pedro's attitude toward staying fit and healthy regimen. And this is what he said, and I quote, "The most exercise he gets is turning the pages of his book," end quote. Ain't that lovely, Mr. Rogers?
Well, yes, I do that exercise as well. Me and my deep dish mirror, definitely on sale at Amazon.
Yes, I have been on this exercise, I think, since the early 70s, reading books about motor racing, and very good. And now it's still the same, but now I'm spending a lot of time watching on YouTube motor racing from all over the... You know, the beauty about YouTube, I'll tell you what happened. Just yesterday, I was looking for something, and obviously I'm looking for stuff in English language, and somehow it got into some video in French. And next thing you know, it was a list of French videos, motorsports, about Raymond Sommer, about Nogaro, about Poe, about this, Clément Ferrand. So there is, and that, what I really enjoyed, even if I don't understand the language, is the photography, you know, cars from 20s, 30s, 50s. It's just beautiful. Okay, sir, since we are coming to the end of the show, we come to Musical Mondial, and today we featured an interview from a gentleman from Argentina. So we're going to feature a tune composed almost a century ago and is generally considered as the second national anthem of Argentina. And I know you have a lot of favorites, and so do I, and this is definitely one of my favorites. So thank you for listening, and please enjoy La Comparsita as performed by Señor Julio Iglesias. Sir, before we go, I know we are still a few weeks away from the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Let me ask you a favorite question. Who's going to win that race after Alonso takes the checkered flag?
Well, exactly. We're going to have chaos. LCH and Max are going to fight. Max is going to go, you know what, Lewis? I'm done. You keep breaking the rules for the start of the race. Let's just take each other out and give Fernando, el más macho del mundo, the win that he so deserves. And then the country of España goes crazy, and it's tapas for everybody.
Very good, very good. Anything else you want to say so we can wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up now, Nass. I want to thank everybody who listens. We've got more interviews coming every week for the next few weeks, so just hang in there. I know we have no F1 races until the end of the month, but we will keep you entertained with facts, figures, and interviews.
And speaking of interviews, you know, I sent an email earlier to the lady who does PR for Elio Castroneves, so I'm waiting on that. And I also yesterday sent a request to Andretti Autosports PR department if I can get 10 minutes with Michael Andretti, and that should be interesting. So let's see what happens. We'll try to get another 5-8 interviews from Sweet Home Alabama, so we keep rolling. And I am planning a lot of racing trips. They may be mostly in Florida or within... If I can go anywhere within 2 hours by plane, I'm very interested. I'm going to go to the Detroit IndyCar race, which is now happening in the streets of Motown, so that should be fun. And Mr. Rogers, if I'm gainfully unemployed after June 14th, which is the target date right now, if that happens, then you might see me in your hood for the Monterey Historics or Rolex Reunion, as they call it now.
Bravo, prego. That's good, Nasser. I will make sure that the West Coast Palatial Studios is in tip-top order, because when you come, we always roll the red carpet.
Oh, dear, with a prancing horse on it?
Nope, we have a Spanish horse.
Oh, two-legged.
Exactly.
Yes, sir. So let's keep rolling here.
Thank you, Nass. Keep up the good work. And now, everyone, good night and enjoy the music.
Que aún dentro de mi alma conservo aquel cariño que tuve para ti. ¿Quién sabe si supieras que nunca te he olvidado? Volviendo a tu pasado, te acordarás.